chapter 15, verse Samuel 15. And you know, I appreciate the thing that Kenny was talking about, the emphasis on the Bible. I'm going to tell you something. If I don't care how many times you've read the Bible, if you start reading it deliberately and start looking at things, it will amaze you what you learn. I've learned so much in these writing, doing these study guides, just like today. And I was writing some and doing some research, and I thought, I taught that wrong. So I got to go back and change that. Just little things like that, that are innocent. It's not that it's going to cost anyone their eternal salvation, but you just see that you were taught something and it got embedded in you and you never researched it for yourself. And I promise you that a lot of what we believe and teach is what somebody else has put in us. And we need to research it for ourselves. I know years ago, the Lord, not years ago, like about a year or 2 years ago, the Lord dealt with me on the subject grace. He said, all you know about grace is what someone else has taught. You have never studied grace. Well, I want you to know I have now. That got my attention. And it wasn't that what other people had taught was wrong, but it's secondhand. It's information. It's not the revelation that you get in from doing the research yourself. So it's vital to get in and make this not a duty. To me, reading the Bible is not a duty. I mean, I get a little spare time, you know, sure, getting ready to go. I'll go in there and lay the Bible down across the counter and just read it as she gets ready. I enjoy it. And I don't think you're going to OD on the Word of God. Okay? You do, that'd be the way. Now, with all that in mind, 1 Samuel chapter 15, beginning with verse 1. Samuel also said to Saul, the Lord sent me to anoint you king over his people. Now, that's my emphasis, okay? Over Israel. Now, therefore, heed the voice of the words of the Lord. Now, the reason I put the emphasis there is I believe it's important. In other words, God's speaking through the prophet. Samuel's telling Saul, look, you're the king, but God's God. And God has sent me to the king to convey this message. Okay? Now, this is the message. He says, thus says the Lord of hosts, I will punish Amalek for what he did to Israel, how he ambushed him on the way when he came up from Egypt. Now, understand why God's doing this. Now, this has been a while, because that was under Moses' leadership. So this has been several years, you understand, that have gone by, and yet you see the mercy of God. God doesn't just execute judgment immediately. If He did, we'd all be dead, wouldn't we? Not a person in here could survive that. But see, he's long-suffering, and He gives time for repentance. So he says, now, Amalek, the reason that I'm passing judgment on him is because of what he did to Israel. Remember, Moses told Joshua to write it down in a book. Okay? He said, verse 3, now go and attack Amalek and utterly destroy all that they have. All that they have. Not only them, but their possessions as well. And do not spare them, but kill both man and woman, and infant, and nursing child, ox and sheep and camel and donkey. Now, some people like to take scriptures like this and talk about how can a loving God kill a little baby? Because God knows more than you do. That's how He can. He knows a whole lot more than we do. He may know what that baby's going to grow up and be and do to His people, do you understand? And yet, he's talking about babies here. He said, kill all of them, ox and sheep, kill them and their animals, in other words. Verse 4, he says, so Saul gathered the people together and numbered them in Telaim, 200,000 foot soldiers and 10,000 men of Judah. And Saul came to a city of Amalek and lay in wait in the valley. Then Saul said to the Kenites, You remember who they were? Moses came out. Actually, if I've understood this correctly, it's where his in-laws came out of. Okay? He says, "Go depart, get down from among the Amalekites, lest I destroy you with them, for you showed kindness to all the children of Israel when they came up out of Egypt." So the Kenites departed from among the Amalekites. That was a real smart move, wasn't it? Let me tell you something. God tells you to get out, you better get out. Or that judgment will fall on you with them. "And Saul attacked the Amalekites from Havilah all the way to Shur, which is east of Egypt. He also took Agag, king of the Amalekites, alive and utterly destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword. But Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep, the oxen, the fatlings, the lambs, and all that was good, and were unwilling to utterly destroy them. But everything despised and worthless, that they utterly destroyed." Now, we can badmouth them for that, but you think about going into a battle and you say, "Man, we're going to kill this. I mean, this is good stuff here. We're going to destroy this. I mean, we could retire the national debt with this one, right?" No, if God said do it, then you can't get your eyes on the value of it. You have to get your eyes on what God wants done with it. If it's devoted to destruction, you better destroy it. And I think we can learn something from Achan out of all that, can't we? Verse 10 says, "Now the word of the Lord came to Samuel saying, I greatly regret that I have set Saul up as king." That would be terrible words for God to say, "I greatly regret that I put that person in that position. For he has turned back from following me." Now think about how Saul turned to following. Now he's turned away from following. It says when he turned from Samuel, God changed his heart. And now he's turned away from God. Instead of going to him, he's going away from him. He's disobedient. He said, "He's turned from following me and has not performed my commandments. And it grieved Samuel, and he cried out to the Lord all that night." Now, to me, this is one of the heavy, heavy responsibilities on leadership. Is when God tells you something, you can't compromise with the people. When the congregation would agree to do half, but we can't do this, that's when you have to stand with God, and if they crucify you, they crucify you. You understand? If they reject you, they reject you. If they expel you, well, you better be on the Lord's side. You understand? It says, that God regretted making Saul king because Saul had turned away from following God, not performed his commandments. It says it grieved Samuel, and he cried out to the Lord all night. You understand, Samuel really loved Saul. And they had an excellent relationship because, I mean, Samuel said some hard things to the king of the nation. But evidently they had a tremendous understanding between one another. "So when Samuel rose early in the morning," now that too got my attention because it said that he cried out to the Lord all night and then he got up early. In other words, he didn't sleep in. It was an urgent thing. "So when Samuel rose early in the morning to meet Saul, it was told Samuel saying," now listen to this, "Saul went to Carmel and indeed he set up a monument for himself." Let me tell you something. Anybody that's trying to bring attention to themselves is on their way down. Just mark it. Pride goes before destruction, the haughty spirit before the fall. If you have to have your picture on the wall and all your accolades and everything displayed before people, be cautious. If that's that important to you, it may be the very thing that pulls you down. I had some people to get upset with me one time because I wouldn't let them hang my picture in the vestibule of a church. I said, "You don't hang somebody's picture out there, it need to be Jesus." And none of us know what he looks like. didn't need a mug shot out there, I promise you. So he set up a monument for himself, and he has gone on a round, passed by and gone down to Gilgal. Then Samuel went to Saul, and Saul said to him, "Blessed are you of the Lord. I have performed the commandment of the Lord." Had he? Do you know a lot of people deceive themselves in saying they have when they've only done a partial fulfillment of the commandment? We've all done that as kids, right? Yeah. You know, clean up the house, and that was my job growing up. You know, we didn't have girls in our family, so I was the girl. I did the mopping and the waxing and all that kind of stuff. And you wouldn't believe how much of that I've done in my lifetime, dishwashing and all that. I could give lessons on it. But I can remember, you know, being checked behind, you know, sweep the floor. We had hardwood floors. And you had, back then, you had the paste and you waxed them with your hand. And Mom would always look under the bed to see if there's any dust under the bed. You didn't sweep that floor, you know. You didn't mop under that bed. Partial. See, when you ask, did you do it? Yes, I did it. That's what Saul was saying, but he didn't do all of it, did he? All of us have been guilty of that, haven't we? Samuel said, "What then is the bleating of the sheep in my ears and the lowing of the oxen which I hear?" Now, boy, that'll tell on you. Oh, you did. What am I hearing? Something wrong with this picture, right? But now Saul stands his ground. I want you to look at this. Saul said, "They." Let me tell you something. If you can't take responsibility, you're not fit for leadership. How many of you have ever watched anything on the Navy SEALs? Just last night, I watched a little bit of that last night. Let me tell you something. There are no superstars. It's a team. No standout. It is a team. You don't blame the other guy. You take the responsibility for it. You don't say he got slack. You never point the finger at another person. Now see, the church can learn something from the SEALs. Operate as a team. Take the responsibility for it. Now think of Abigail. Remember her? She hadn't done anything wrong. Her husband was wicked and all this kind of stuff, and yet she comes up and asks David to forgive her for her transgression. She bore it on herself. Well, now we have to learn to do that ourselves, not to say, "Well, the people made me do it." Appreciate your enthusiasm with all that. He said, Saul said, "They have brought them from the Amalekites, for the people spared the best of the sheep and the oxen to sacrifice to the Lord your God." Isn't that interesting? "And the rest we have utterly destroyed." In other words, we're smarter than God. Basically, that's what they're saying. I mean, we had enough sense not to wipe out that good stuff. God didn't. We've never done anything like that, so we'll just keep reading, okay? Verse 16, "Then Samuel said to Saul, 'Be quiet.'" In other words, shut up. Now, that's something to say to the king. But let me tell you something. Prophets aren't bashful. They weren't then, and they aren't now. And that's exactly what he's telling. Just be still. He said, "I will tell you what the Lord said to me last night." And that got Saul's attention. He said to him, "Speak on." So Samuel said, "When you were little in your own eyes..." Now, that little phrase right there tells me he's not little in his own eyes anymore. Because he says, "When you were." We know he's not because he's already built a monument for himself, hasn't he? So he thinks himself to be something that he isn't. Says, "When you were little in your own eyes, Were you not head of the tribes of Israel? And did not the Lord anoint you king over Israel? Now the Lord sent you on a mission and said, go utterly destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they are consumed. Why then did you not obey the voice of the Lord? Why did you swoop down on the spoil and do evil in the sight of the Lord? And Saul said to Samuel, but I have obeyed the voice of the Lord and gone on the mission which the Lord sent me and brought back Agag, king of Amalek. I have utterly destroyed the Amalekites. Now, that's a paradox. How could he have utterly destroyed them if he had one of them alive? I mean, the evidence was right there in front of him, wasn't it? But the people, see, he never would take responsibility, would he? But the people took of the plunder, sheep, and oxen, the best of the things which should have been utterly destroyed, to sacrifice to the Lord your God in Gilgal. You know, Saul never identifies God as his God here. It's always Samuel's God. Just tells me he had no relationship with God. Has the Lord, now, so Samuel said, has the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Which would God like better, the best of the sheep or obedience? Obviously, obedience. Look, he says, behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to heed than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft. Now, I've heard a lot of people teach rebellion as witchcraft. But that's not what he's saying. He's comparing it to witchcraft. Okay? For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and adultery. But you have rejected, or pardon me, because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he has also rejected you from being king. In other words, you want to be stubborn against God, you picked the wrong one. And that's what he's talking to him about. Now, rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft. What, you know, what's the comparison? What do they have in common? What does rebellion and witchcraft have in common? Sure, they're totally away from God. You understand? Witchcraft does nothing to please God, right? Does rebellion. No. Does absolutely nothing. As a matter of fact, it does everything against God. It's hostile to God, isn't it? So both of them displease God. Both of them are disgusting to God. It's not that rebellion is, it's as. And it's important to distinguish that, okay? God-ordained authority. You think about this. Now, here Saul is the king. Now, right here is... This is the thing that troubles me about church structure, people understanding church structure. Not church structure, but people understanding. Because you think of the king or the president or the pastor oversight, whatever you want to call it. You think of that guy as being, you know, the buck stops here type thing. But the bottom line is, he is just a representative. I don't care if he's the president, I don't care if he's the pastor, he's a representative, okay? And he has to be under authority. And I promise you, when he gets out from under the authority and the pastor rebels against God, the church is going in the wrong direction. I don't care if its number does increase. You can increase the number going in the wrong direction, yes, ma'am. You certainly can. You can do your thing, and if you have the charisma, we've seen it. We've seen it here in America. We've seen the great followings, the millions of dollars that have been pulled in from people going in the wrong direction. But in the end, it costs you. That's the thing we have to realize, that there is nobody that does not have authority over them. Not a human being on the face of the earth. And every pastor must realize that. Allow me to use oversight, okay? The oversight of every church or ministry must understand that he has to be under authority. He can't call the shots out of his own head. That's why it's so important when you look at the second, third chapters of Revelation, when he's talking about the messenger of the church, he says, I have something against you. I have something against you. I have something against you. He didn't say, I have something against the church. He said, I have something against you. Who's he talking about? He's talking about the oversight of the church, what we commonly call the pastor, because you're allowing this activity to go on in your congregation. In other words, you're letting the people influence you. If you read the ninth chapter of Acts and just follow through Paul's ministry, his conversions in the ninth chapter, you'll find that one of the key things with Paul's success of ministry was God delivered him from the people. He said, I've delivered you from the people. Until a minister is delivered from the people, he'll never obey God. The people will pull him away. In other words, it'll be a popular thing. I've sat more times than I want to talk about, okay? And listen to the pastors talk, and I just listen, and they'd tell another one, you can't do this. I've had them to tell me, you can't do that. I said, sure I can. God told me to do it. I can do it. Well, it's going to split your church. I said, well, it's already split then. That's the way I look at it. It's split between those that want to follow God and those that don't. My laying something on the line is not what split the church. Their heart split it. It just came to the surface, you understand. So we need a heart after God, don't we? Now, heart after God, will it obey? If He says, go destroy the Amalekites, will it destroy them? Will it keep any of the stuff, or will it do what He says and to utterly destroy? Well, that's what he's getting at. There's a point here, okay? Anything other than that is then rebellion and stubbornness. In other words, I know what you said, God, but I don't want to do it. I know, none of you have ever been stubborn against God, right? I mean, I told God, I said, hey, do you know what's going to happen if I do that? Now, he's never even humored me into answering. Does he know what's going to happen? Of course he knows what's going to happen. I'm the idiot standing there asking one, do you not? That's where we have to get rid of the stubbornness, right? And he compares that to iniquity and idol worship. Stubbornness to idol worship. He didn't say it was idol worship. But it's thinking more of yourself than Him, isn't it? And what happens when you reject the Word of God? You get rejected. You don't want to follow it? He won't make you. But He won't support you in going your direction either. Verse 24, then Saul said to Samuel, I have sinned. Finally he admits. See, up to this point, he's tried to defend himself. Now here he says, I have sinned, for I have transgressed. Before it was the people. He said, I have transgressed the commandment of the Lord and your words because I feared the people and obeyed their voice. Now let me tell you something. Any of you that are planning on going in ministry, the one thing that you must be delivered from is the people. You cannot fear the people. And I'll tell you in advance, I don't care what you do for them, they'll still talk about you. They'll talk good to your face, and when they get off with somebody else, they'll talk bad about you. Best sermon they ever heard, you know, on Sunday morning. And then when they get in the other crowd, I don't know why he doesn't preach more on this subject. That's just people. They're fickle.
Fickle.
You liked that, did you? So you can't be controlled by people, but yet you love the people. I mean, you think about a shepherd's relationship with the sheep. Hey, you know, he gets some old rebellious sheep every once in a while that do not want to follow with the herd. they're determined they're going to go over here and get themselves in trouble, you know. Fall off. You've seen the picture where the shepherd goes down picking up the lamb off of the cliff and all this, and risking his life to spare that sheep from being where it shouldn't have been in the first place. I would recommend you reading a book called A Shepherd Looks at Psalm 23. What's the guy's first name? His last name's Keller. Pardon? David Keller. It is, David Keller. And you get some insight into that relationship of the shepherd and the sheep and of Jesus in the church and of the pastor in the congregation as to how it should be. And sometimes it's a tough love. Tough love. You know, I was just thinking, my grandson yesterday, I had to go, they called me and asked me if I could, my daughter called me and asked me if I could pick him up with school. He had pink eye. And they didn't want him around any of the other kids, so I went over there and picked him up. And anyway, they got this medication to put in his eye, and they brought him down to our house last night, and they couldn't get the drops in his eyes. So, you know, my daughter said, "Daddy, will you come in here and help me?" I said, "Sure, I will." And so I just go in there and I pick him up and I laid him down across the bed and I said, "We're going to put the drops in your eye. That's a fact. Now, do you want to do it the easy way?"
That's what I tell James all the time.
Well, now, sometimes that's the way you have to be in the church. What am I doing? Trying to hurt him? No, I'm trying to get him healed. But how many of you know everybody doesn't like that discomfort for the moment? Well, let me tell you something. If it's uncomfortable for the moment, so be it. We're looking for the cure, right? Right. Yes, that's why I said you should read. You should read how the shepherd as a profession treats the sheep. He'll die for them, but he'll break their leg to keep them from wandering away too. Interesting. So Saul said, "I feared the people." Fearing the people will make you disobey God. That's why I put so much emphasis on that. Now, when people hear me teach that, they think you're a hard man. I'm not a hard person at all, really. I mean, I'll go with you the last mile of the way. That's just the way it is. But going with you the last mile of the way, we're not going to listen to a whole lot of mouth on the way. Does that make sense? Didn't mean to spit on you there. Okay. In other words, you're there for the welfare of the person, but you don't want the person to get you killed on the way. You know what I mean? You have to obey God. And if you're not, then you're not leading them in the right direction. If you're not doing what God told you to do in destroying the Amalekites, then you're not leading the people in there to destroy the Amalekites, are you? Verse 25, Saul says, "Now therefore, please pardon my sin and return with me that I may worship the Lord." Now I want you to look at this. "But Samuel said to Saul, I will not return with you, for you have rejected the word of the Lord, and the Lord has rejected you for being king over Israel." Now listen to what the prophet says. I'm not hanging around when anybody's rejected God. Don't you? "And as Samuel turned around to go away, Saul seized the edge of his robe and it tore. So Samuel just took advantage of this opportunity. Samuel said to him, the Lord has torn the kingdom of Israel from you today." Today. You understand? Today. That day. Now look at this. "And has given it to a neighbor of yours who is better than you." Wow. You're telling the king that there's somebody there better than him. Now, you think that lodged on the inside of Saul? That's why he had such a problem with David, because he knew David was better than he was in the sight of God. He's doing this under by as a representative of God.
Because later God told him to go to where David was at, and he said Saul will kill him.
We're going to get into that.
But I'm saying right here, he wasn't a bit ashamed to tell Saul
nothing. No, he's doing what God sent him to do. In other words, you think about this. He's on a mission, just as Saul was on a mission to destroy the Amalekites. Samuel's on a mission to take the kingdom away from Saul, or to announce it anyway.
Righteous indignation, though, will drive you to do things you wouldn't normally do.
Exactly, and see what causes that Spirit of God stirring you,
right.
Stirring on the inside. See, this is something that's been propagated through the years by the leadership of the church. People have the idea of a pastor as somebody that strokes flesh. Let me tell you something. If you think the pastor strokes flesh, then you don't know a shepherd. And the definition of pastor is shepherd, period. A shepherd. Poema. Translated 18 times. The Greek word used 18 times in the New Testament. And never translated pastor in the singular. One time translated pastors in Ephesians 4:11 in the King James Version of the Bible. And every other time, those other times was shepherd. So a pastor is a shepherd, period. That's the definition. Literally, a shepherd. Now study, you want to know what the pastor ministry is, study a shepherd. And you tell me the shepherd strokes the flesh of the sheep. No, that shepherd looks after the welfare of the sheep. Does he feed them what they want? No. He feeds them what they need. Does he take them where they want to go? No, he takes them where they need to go. That's the shepherd. We've had this idea that it's a popularity contest. It isn't. Shepherds aren't interested in popularity. They have a mission that they're trying to accomplish. And that's take the sheep to a place that they haven't been before. You understand, you take them from the lamb into adulthood to where they can reproduce. And that's the whole purpose of all this anyway, is reproduction. Now we could go for a while on that one because that's a sore spot with me because of what people say a pastor is. I've had people to come to me and say, "You're not a pastor." I tell them I never advertised that I was. I mean, I do. I promise you, I'll tell you that in a red hot second. I don't advertise what I am. I just do what I'm supposed to do. But I promise you this, I will tell you in no uncertain terms, God didn't call anybody to stroke the flesh. He called us to lead people into a relationship with Him. And if we're not doing that, then we're all in rebellion against God. And we can't afford that. Now, let me tell you what a true shepherd is. He's one that will lay down his life for the sheep. But do you know that word life is not bios? It's not talking about physical life. It's actually the word psuche. But how many want to lay down their self-life? How many want to lay down their popularity? How many want to lay down their reputation to protect the flock? Or how many of them want to do what pleases the flock so they can maintain the right standing with the flock? No, we need to maintain a right standing with God. That is always in the best interest of the flock. Always. Whether they see it at that particular time or not. Well, we'll stop there. It's time for the break.